And so, right. So ultimately, if you are a black person and you're saying you don't get down with the conscious community
because of this incident,
you ain't cultural, you
this
ain't
is the
down
final
because,
straw.
And it's not even them. It's like any of these incidents, you know, you got a lot of misogynists, ignorant people, unread people, fakers and fools. You got a lot of nonsense within the conscious community. But go into corporate America and tell me you ain't got con misogynist. Men, fakers, misogyny,
liars,
racism.
Hypocrites.
Right. Show me one arena. Corporate America, the entertainment industry, the system of capitalism, the nation of America, the systems and institutions, any bureaucracy.
Yeah, like nobody stopped
that doesn't
to
have
young,
high.
Young
so
jock.
It ain't about the purity of the institution. It's about your own values and your own life mission.
Right.
Because anything outside of that, you cannot tell me I ain't down for black people because I hate black people. I don't care for black people. I think that whites are superior. I'm down for the global status quo or for the national status quo. And I'm not willing to put my time, labor, and resources up for any noble thing. That's what you're saying. And you can't blame it on SETI. You can't blame it on Dr. Umar.
Well, because none of these personalities are anything new.
Right.
I mean, if you understand history. Right. And a lot of time we idealize people of the past. I mean,
and
in
I
their
guarantee
day,
you, if I put on an admiral's hat and big gold epaulettes, and then because that's what Garvey did.
Right. Well, that's the point I was about to make. It's right. Like in their day, these people had the same complaints. I mean,
right.
Well, it was Du Bois who was like, you know, outspoken against Garvey, calling him a buffoon
and a gorilla
and a gorilla.
And then Garvey said that Du Bois was a confused, self-hating mulatto.
Right.
You know.
Same thing Umar saying about
right.
Poor SETI.
And
poor
somebody was asking
SETI.
Me, you'll never see our... And Malcolm X was quick with the handkerchief head Uncle Tom.
Right.
The Big Six. You know, he mockingly called the civil rights leaders the Big Six. Abernathy and King and all of them. They was bumping heads. And I'm saying that does not legitimize them as individuals or the struggle they represent. And I do think that SETI and Umar, from my own point of view and my own perspective, are not legitimate because they don't have viable solutions for our people.
Right.
You know, I think they pick at the low-hanging fruit. But again, they're not my issue because they even though we're, and I'm not even going to do like the Christians like to do, that's not a real Christian or that's not a real Muslim or that's not a real feminist. You know, I'm going to say, yes, SETI is a black nationalist and Umar is a Pan-Africanist.
The Prince of Pan.
Because that movement overall is a broad umbrella. It's a huge tent. So it's going to attract all kind of people. That's when you have a broad global movement like Pan-Africanism.
Right.
That seeks to envelop all Africans in the African diaspora. You're going to have all kind of messed up people. So I'm not even going to say that that person is not a real Pan-Africanist. But within that larger sphere, you know, I'm vegan. You know, I'm scientifically based and the level of a scientific socialist and all that. Within that movement, there's all kind of other little pockets within that movement. Just like saying I'm an American. You can be a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. You can be a Wicca tree hugger. You know, living in the wilds of North Dakota. There's
right.
all kind of Americans. And until I see, if you are a black person and you're talking about, I don't mess with the conscious community, I don't mess with this, I don't mess with that because of this individual, then you should have long stopped messing with America, long stopped messing with capitalism, long stopped messing with Christianity, long stopped messing with most other bodies, ideologies, and institutions in this society and in the world. Because if you are using a stricter yardstick about what you're going to be a part of or what you're going to support or what you're going to believe in, all of these other things have long disgraced themselves long and 10 times more intensely than Pan-Africanism, pro-blackness, consciousness, wokeness, whatever you want to call it. You know, because and if you are with them people, all these hoteps, I don't think it has anything to do with the sexes, the fools, the clowns, the fakers. It has nothing to do with them. It's all on you. If you don't support your people's movement for liberation, it ain't because of anybody but you.
Right.
That's all I want to say.
And the thing about it is it's advantageous to, I don't know what we would call it, but ostracize, vet these people who are counterproductive to the movements that they're claiming to be a part of.
Right.
It's like it's okay to be critical of personalities who claim to be a part of your movement. You know, and I think that's what the other side of it is. You have people who are saying, I'm totally abandoning being conscious or whatever. Right. But then you have people who are on the other end of the spectrum, like you can't criticize because you're, you know, you're helping aid our enemies.
Right. These being, unity holes.
Right. To by being critical.
Right. And that's right. We have to be unified. How dare you criticize another person? And I always tell those people, if your unity is so fragile that any level of internal disagreement or criticism is a threat to it, you might as well get rid of it now. Because you need a strong enough unity to withstand COINTELPRO type tactics.
Right.
You need a strong enough unity that can withstand, you know, open warfare and aggression, long prison sentences, frame ups, you know, deterioration of personal leaderships, and where your personal friendship or connection can deteriorate, but your political and ideological and strategic relationship can go on.
Right.
Unity needs to be tested and refined and strengthened. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so don't tell me, you're a threat to unity. And then you have to tell me what specific unity are you pointing to? I have strategic alliances. I have familial ties. I have ideological ties.
Right.
I have all kind of pockets where I'm unified with people. And then there's people that I'm unified on one thing. You know, like if you are trying to, you know, struggling for the liberation of our people, but you suck on ham hocks for dinner, then we are unified in one arena, and then we're totally distant in another arena. And we can come together while you know, and I can talk to you about you sucking bone gristle.
If you want
to
hear it.
And chewing on bone marrow. I could talk to you, and we could disagree and criticize each other on that. And you can call me a tree hugger. You can call me a pure beam of light for my vegan diet, whatever your thoughts of
those,
me. I mean, that's what people say.
Such,
I don't know what it
you
means.
Know, wow. I know.
I'm just saying.
Those are the type of insults I want.
You know,
like, geez, Dita,
so
you are so
and then
amazing.
After we're done beating each other up over dietary and ecological issues, we can get back to where we are unified in the political arena or in an economic agenda we have together.
Right. Well, but the thing, too, is like it's amazing to me because it's like, have we never had con men who are black and are trying to take advantage of black people?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's a realistic concern.
Right.
You know, very real concern. And it happens a lot. So for us to be critical and analytical of people claiming or wanting certain titles. I mean, these guys literally want to be considered, quote unquote, leaders of something.
Right.
So it's valid to question their intentions, their credentials, their capacity to actually do what they're claiming to do. I mean, I think Umar is losing because bottom line is the promises that he's made and the assertions that he's made hasn't come
to fruition.
Right. You know, and the thing about SETI is he makes very little promises. He doesn't really have a platform.
And he kind of leaves it to you as the individual. His basic thing is wake up yourself, wake your
Here's
own
the information.
Mind up. And then when you have that, when you become a little capsule of militancy to bang on that beast daily. And he doesn't even specify
what that entails.
Right. Well, banging on the way you can be a threat to the systems and institutions of oppression, capitalism, white domination is by coming to his lectures.
buying his
and that's
t-shirts.
An old hustle where they say, you know, just wake our people up to the knowledge. Once our people get the knowledge, voila.
Right.
You know, and what I found, a lot of our people have the knowledge and they sell it on the open market to the highest bidder. There's a lot
Absolutely.
Of black, brilliant black people who work for everything from NASA to work for
they're
public relations firms.
They're about to release that movie with the three African-American women who worked on
See, I have a problem. I'd like to avoid that topic. I'd like to censor that topic. Because I'm still trying to figure out whether or not it's appropriate to celebrate black people using their genius on behalf of, because you know, NASA is not, we like to think about NASA.
So how do you feel about organized sports then?
Oh, ball chasing? I'm not a big, I don't
It's pretty much the same thing.
Right. And I'm not even saying, I'm not making the call. I'm saying I'd like people to inform me, is it really appropriate for us to celebrate? Like, let's say Hitler, let's say Einstein never fled Austria, and he stayed under the influence of the Third Reich.
And all his great accomplishments.
And then his theory of relativity and all of his research and all of his works fell into the hands of the Nazis.
Bolster the Nazis' agenda.
Would Jews celebrate his genius?
Was Einstein a Jewish person?
Yes. And they said he's one of the biggest plagiarizers in academic history. A lot of his stuff was, but that's a whole nother discussion with the man. Because, you know, he was the man of the last century. They named him the man of the century.
Oh.
You know, they have the man of the year. And then, you know, they said he was the most influential mind.
Wow.
Of the 20th century.
Deep.
And let's say that influential mind, all of his research and work and analysis and theories were handed over to the Third Reich.
Right.
Would he be a celebrated figure? Because in there the was another community. Guy, Oppenheimer, the Nazi scientist who gave us rocket propel.
Uh-huh.
He's the one, the reason why we fly on jets instead of, what are the?
Propellers.
Propellers.
Right.
But he was an admitted Nazi. So they brought
was
him
he
here. No.
Oh, okay.
No, he was of, good Aryan stock.
Blonde
but they
hair,
brought him here,
eyes.
But he's not celebrated. Like in within the industry, he's celebrated. Like within the realms of engineering and science, the people know him. They study his work.
Right.
But in the larger society, you know, kids don't have Oppenheimer posters on their wall like they have Einstein. You don't see people wearing Oppenheimer t-shirts like Einstein.
Right.
Because even though he was a genius, he can't really be a celebrated genius. You can recognize and respect his
work,
but you can't really celebrate him as a person or even really acknowledge that because if you go look, he was a Nazi.
Right.
Which is an enemy of the United States. So I'm just saying, and I'm not trying to tear nobody down, but there are a lot of brilliant black folks from back then till now, and then there will be in the future. And we already know, because there was a time where it didn't really matter, because we were told we were subhuman, three-fifths a person, and we didn't even have the intellectual capacity for complex thought to engage in not only the STEM, the science, technology, math, and engineering, but we didn't even have the mind for public policy and political science and philosophy.
Right.
So there was a time where we were just trying to prove to ourselves that we had not only human intellectual capacity, but we wanted to prove to the rest of the world, right?
Uh-huh.
And so now that we know it, okay, we know we're smart,
we
know that we're capable people. So now can we put another qualifier on that? So no, it's not enough just to be smart, but you also have to, you know, use your intelligence for the best interest of your people, and by extension, the best interest of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And is it still appropriate to celebrate our people who make direct contributions to the U.S. empire using their time, talent, and resources to build up and reinforce and legitimize the empire? Is that fully appropriate to hold these people up as heroes? Even if we acknowledge their brilliance like Oppenheimer, nobody would deny Oppenheimer's brilliance, just like no one denies
Einstein's. But you're not going to see a movie about it.
Certain people, because Einstein was anti-Nazi, he went against the Nazi, even though the FBI, the establishment, and even more so, he was a political progressive. He was pro-integration and all that. He was a political progressive as well as a and he worked hard to try to subvert his research being used to develop the atom bombs.
Right.
So I'm just saying we can acknowledge people without celebrating them. That's all I'm saying. And then if that is for to say, we're going to produce more geniuses. We're going to produce more hyper-talented people. And they'll know, I don't want to just be recognized. I want to be celebrated. I want to be a part of our historical, our grand. I want to be on the right side of history when it's written down. So not only am I going to be the genius that I am, I'm not going to go to Boeing and design weapon systems. I'd rather go to Africa and design water for purification systems. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
How do we encourage that if we're celebrating you just for being smart and black and nothing else?
Well, not just being smart and black, but being smart and black and working for NASA.
Right. But NASA, that's the thing. We think NASA is just about exploring the stars. The NASA is a branch of the U.S. military and U.S. empire.
Yeah.
They put them satellites come up, them satellites ain't all pointing out to space. A lot of them are looking down, and NASA does surveys and gives information, logistical information to the U.S. military. Right. NASA Absolutely. Is a part yeah. of the U.S. empire.
But and I'm very, just saying they're being celebrated, not specifically just for being black and smart, but where they
right
where they applied
if they it. Had applied it somewhere else
no movie
right
no movie
so I mean but
not then, a Hollywood
hey,
movie
hey you know and people want to people get mad at me for that you know they like how dare you I'm a hater or whatever
well they get mad about anything
right
somebody says
I understand why you're
you
mad.
Always
shout out that. To Sasha Go Hard I have to pull that up
what I don't know that
she made a song about people that are mad called I Understand Why They Mad
oh
You know, Maybe take a we have to energy, look. Make a my enemy. You know, it's drill music, man.
Oh, okay.
You
got to,
it's research purposes.
I'm an old man.
I do it on research purposes. I did a whole theoretical analysis on the dab. The yeah, so, well, I just like
I'm
to
still
keep
talking
up.
About,
I keep my hand on the pulse of the
I'm
people,
still talking
man.
About
I'm a
Gucci
man of the people.
I'm still
hey,
talking
yeah,
about
he's
Gucci
relevant.
Man. Oh, okay. See, there
hey,
you go.
You
see,
still
I'm
in the loop. He's still relevant. He just got out of jail.
I've been knowing some things.
Okay.
Got your yeah. young boys knowing stuff. That's right.
All
right,
so that's all. So I just wish you hadn't brought up.
To me, I think in the conflict, SETI, the general, has a slight advantage. Only because he's so ambiguous, and he's more of a character. He's more right. of an authentic character, and I think that's what people find.
And can I address the pink elephant in the room?
Yeah.
And I brought this up online, okay, and I was surprised with how many people agree with me.
Here we go.
Does not their conflict have homoerotic undertones? Oh, you just pulled that one out. That doesn't go with it. But no, seriously, no. does not the SETI.
The thing that cracked me up when I first heard the Prince.
Right. And I think it's ironic because of their stance on homosexuality. If
right,
they, if
of
they
course.
Weren't. So,
right,
you when chest thumping manly
right,
man,
right.
I wouldn't even speak on it. But because pretty much their whole shtick is
well Dr. Umar to me right. initially when I first heard the his rant reminded me so much of that guy who was at that church and said, "I'm not gay anymore. I love women." I mean, they had like almost the same sounding voice. I had to look twice, like, huh? Are you trying to convince us that you know you're tough? It was just that whole
right.
insincere.
Well, you see how sometimes when I think he's a performer because when he's going to an intellectual environment, he wears the suit and tie and he's very academic. But then when he's in some RBG stuff, then he's wearing the hoodie and the baggy jeans. I think he like literally rehearses and has like
he's in the mirror
costuming. Because he's like, yo, I'm about to go as SETI. I'm about to talk to
right.
Detroit.
And, some of the,
and
some
so
of
I put on a Scully. And he just couldn't find one. He was in a luxury hotel. It wasn't too many like Raiders Scully, so he had to use the Philadelphia.
Excuse me, who has a cap?
Oh, right, and I it was borrow. Philly because I'm from Philly. Philly street cred. You know, there's some real bangers in Philly.
Right, right. There you go.
And so I think he's a performer, and you got to get dressed. And then he psyched himself up. He rehearsed
because he didn't even sound.
He scheduled
right
that fake phone call, and the cues was off. I know. I can't complain. How often are our cues and our fade ins and fade out? I understand when you have a scripted show. You know, even if it's like not formally
well,
scripted.
I'm just going to come out here right now and say, I love women. Women, 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 women.
You see, I'm like, ugh, yeah. I love women.
Well, that's how, you know, Umar, when he was cursing and the way he was saying, I can't say the word, the N word, man, it was just hilarious. Like, it was so insincere. Like, it hurt him right. to have to say that. Like,
which it would. I wouldn't want to have to get on stage and say that word over and over. You know, I actually did. Fences is trending now. I actually did a dramatic interpretation of Fences. Hmm. And there was one scene where I had to repeatedly say the N-word. It's not very comfortable. And then there's a lot of white people, and they're literally there judging you.
They're like, yeah, so.
Yeah.
That was so authentic.
Yeah, and I got
That's the way my grandpa
place.
Would say
I was offended.
It.
They gave me second place. Like, did you see the one where the nigger was saying nigger? You know, so interesting. You know, so. But anyway, that's high
deep,
school.
Deep.
But.
No, but he just sounded like so, wow.
So you agree that there are homoerotic. Because, you know, we had a beef over the last summer.
Oh, yes. Not
it
us.
It never got, you know, we had beef.
No, we didn't have beef.
No, not you and I. I told you, I wanted to stage beef between us to try to get the show's ratings up, and you ain't down, man.
I couldn't think of anything.
But you're not a marketing genius.
Hold on.
Like
first of all, first of all, let's get this out in the air.
It's too late.
You know what I'm saying?
Don't try now.
You on my coattails. I started this.
It's too late, man. It's not going to work. They're not going to buy it. But we did beef in these streets.
Right.
But it never got that emotional. Mm-mm. Even when we show up in our tomato cage, it was gardening beef, you know, real beef, son.
Right.
Out in these streets. We beefing over resources like colonizers and the colonized. You know, this is some French Fanonian type. Right. But anyway, it never got that emotional.
Maybe not on our end. I think on the perpetrator's end.
But it wasn't like a mutual, like, it was kind of like, dude, leave us alone. What the hell is your problem?
Please get a life. That would be awesome.
So it never got that. Right. Did you ever feel any, like, strong emotion?
What I felt was like I was disappointed in humanity.
And it was annoying. But it was an annoyance. But it wasn't those deep guttural emotions.
No, they were feeling it. Like,
so by the time you were like, because I'd be like, yo, man.
Stole my girl.
I just got here and our water hoses are cut. And you'd be like, man, why would he do that? You weren't like, let me chill. Like Randy Moss.
When I see
him. I was annoyed as hell. So all I'm saying.
I even did like a.
Vegan beef, that's called seitan. We didn't have beef, we had seitan.
We had beets. We had beets.
We had tofu.
We had tofu.
We had tofu all summer.
Oh, we had seitan. We had wheat gluten.
Yeah, we had wheat gluten wheat all meat. Summer, son. But yeah, we had beef. But like I said, when I saw those were some real emotions they were evoking in each other.
Yeah, I even made videos, and it was just like, you know, expressing that it wasn't going to stop us. But it wasn't like
it wasn't like you got to do this right. It was
when I see you.
Maybe it should have been. We didn't hit our fundraising goal.
Oh, okay. Well, next time.
Let me tell you, I started this urban gardening.
Right, he on my coattail. I'm the prince of it now.
Right.
Today you might have started, but anyway. See? No, but those guys just, were very emotional.
Right. You know, and I've been in
strangely emotional.
I got into a fight with a dude. Last time I had was in fisticuffs. And then if you going in somebody like that. But anyway, maybe we're spending too much time on this.
I'm not going to talk about the last time I was in a fight.
But the last time I was in a fight, it wasn't an emotional thing. Right? Yeah, it's always embarrassing at this age. It's always embarrassing, but we think it's. But anyway.
Yeah, it wasn't, anger.
Right. That's
even
the thing.
Then, even after
Why
the initial
is it so
anger.
Emotional? I could even see if Dr. Umar got on and was like, yo, let me tell you something. We've gotten some disagreements. And when I see you, I'm going to see you. And you know, you're talking a lot of trash, and, you know, but, you know, just watch your mouth. Woo, woo, woo. Woody whoop. Chest thump. Muscle flex. I'm done. But it was just like, he was emoting.
2 hours in.
He was emoting. Like,
my man was like,
you
2 hours
You broke up with
in.
A girl, you went home and had a drink, and then you called her and you got her machine. And you were like, let me tell you, you don't even remember. You don't even know. You don't even know. It was like that.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Like, it was the kind of emotion that, like, a white preteen female.
Oh,
golf,
my goodness.
Girl. That was the kind
Who's
you got
to
go
cut
to
herself.
That level of emotional, right? Yeah, was anybody in that hotel room with Dr. Umar?
He needed a safe space.
He needed some support.
Was somebody videoing it?
You know, can we get a prayer circle around Dr. Umar?
Yeah.
And he was videotaping
fragile,
it all
emotional
alone.
State.
And he's talking about how he's selling out arenas around town.
Well,
I'm going to stay booked.
That's all right. That's nice.
Well, I see. Chicago brought him here.
Right. Didn't even invite me.
I'm
out in
these
streets. I'm the most vocal person when I'm there.
Right. But anyway, so.
Nobody's invited me.
But I just think it's ironic that it was so. These are men who go around telling other black men how to be manly. But they're exhibiting not, as they define manhood.
The most unmanly.
Right. And they're exhibiting some of the most non-traditional standard. Patriarchal male behavior. Well, men are supposed to be.
They're
and
evolved.
Then he's told the women to stay out of it.
Ooh, okay.
And let the men handle this. And I like.
But
what
half
are you
going to
go
rant,
scratch his eyes out?
Well, half of his rant was him defending his sexual prowess. Like, yeah, and I know about the ladies you was with. Just wait. You better keep. I'm a reveal it because I'm good with the ladies. I'm
he's
good.
Celibate though, so I don't know how. That's how great he is. The Prince of Pan-Africanism is the only celibate Mac Daddy.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he can do it all.
It's magic.
Okay.
Anyway, moving along.
Moving on.
You spent way too much time. But with
my
two
bottom point was, I see a lot of people denouncing Pan-Africanism and Black nationalism
based on these two
dudes.
So the conclusion is, you were never down anyway.
Exactly.
So stop it.
Stop using anybody as an excuse to abandon a movement. You know. Stop it. I'm a vegan. I can't be like, oh, you know, Dr. Gary Null, and he's the herbalist, and he's a great vegan, and he did something stupid or said something stupid. So I'm going back to eating hamburgers. This vegan stuff ain't real. Y'all, see, I told y'all, they full of it. No, that's because I wanted to eat some.
You were secretly craving meat your whole life.
Suck gristle and gnaw on bones. There's nobody else but me.
Blood, bones.
But it's 2017, man.
Whoop, whoop.
What's the numbers on the homicides for 2017?
Oh, okay. So, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the homicide rate here in the city of Chicago. So the ironic thing was that we were going to talk about this Friday.
Yeah, we wanted to do it Friday, but we was locked out.
And we didn't have access to the airwaves. But on Friday, when I looked, I looked them up on Thursday. Mm. Thursday night, they were at, for the year, to that point, 771. So by the time, I guess, Thursday was done, or Friday, somebody had gotten murdered. But, so Diallo was like, you know, make sure you check the numbers.
Right, because I was like, last I checked, it was 760-something.
Right. So since, in between Friday and the 1st, the grand total was 779. So there was 7 homicides. Over the weekend here in Chicago. Mm. So that's the grand total for the year, 779 homicides.
Wow. And we haven't had those numbers since the crack epidemic of the early and mid-90s.
Yeah.
And even understanding that, Chicago, with such obscene rates, Chicago's number 3 in the nation for homicides.
Right. Well, you know, the numbers get...
Per capita, not raw numbers, but per capita.
Well, per capita, Chicago really isn't even on the map.
Right.
Of the top 30.
Right.
But by pure volume, Chicago is
number 3. But per capita, right. Chicago's much lower.
And the thing about it, last year, it's literally almost doubled since last year's. Right. Homicide rates last year were 2,989. This year was 4,339 plus 7. Right. I'm not going to do the math. But, yeah, at least almost double.
Wow. And then, we were saying, for every individual either injured or murdered by gun violence, there's at least a dozen other people who are directly traumatized.
Affected, right.
Family members, loved ones, children, witnesses on the scene, all who exhibit signs of trauma.
Right. And that's what my wife is getting a doctorate in community psychology.
Right.
And that's the focus of her study, the actual traumas.
Right.
And so she does these workshops where she goes into areas where a shooting just, you know, happened recently. Mm-hmm. And they do she's a art therapist. And she goes in, she does a trauma type activity with them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she'll ask, well, if she goes in and does a workshop specifically for that, then obviously everyone there has been affected by the gun violence. But just she's also a special ed teacher in the school system, and, you know, asking her, you know, every day 30 or so students that she sees, and you know, asking them if they've been affected by gun violence. And she said all of them, literally all of them. And so, but the violence is generally concentrated here in Chicago.
Right.
You know, okay, homicides happen all over, but by far, the vast majority of them happen on the west side and southwest side of the city,
the black
which
area.
Is historically the black.
And currently. And numerically and demographically the black neighborhoods.
Exactly.
Right.
Contemporarily.
Trying to be academic with it. This is
sorry.
A show.
Right
this
now.
Not,
oh, sorry. Excuse me.
You can,
and as the black prince of numbers. So, yeah. And another statistic that really kind of was amazing to me is the statistics dealing with the offenders and the victims. So, what, 83.4% of the people actually getting shot are African Americans between the ages, well, are African Americans. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of those, what is it, like 53.22% of the people murdered are between the ages of 17 and 25, and 45.5% of the offenders are in between the ages of 17 and 25. And keep in mind that in Chicago, black people only make up 33% of the overall population. Right. So the vast majority of people being killed are African-Americans. They're being killed by young African-American males.
In the prime of their life.
In the prime of their life, 17 to 25. So the offenders, you know, lose their life, so to speak, generally speaking, if they're caught. And, of course, the victims lose their life. And like you said, all the people that affects. So it's really a huge, huge problem
right.
in the city. It's right. not just rhetoric. It's like, you know, statistically.
But it's a symptom problem. Of other problems.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, in Chicago, it's like, as I was saying, you know, most of these people.
Oh, excuse me. Let me make a correction. 90% of the homicide victims are male. The 83.4% of homicides are as a result of shooting. And that number is important because shooting. We live in a city where you can't have a gun.
Right. You can't buy a slingshot.
You can't buy spray paint in the city.
You can't buy a slingshot.
You know,
in within the city limits.
So that, you know, brings up a huge question, like how in a place that guns are illegal to have, how is it that the main cause of homicides are as a result of shooting, and not just shooting, not just guns, but handguns?
Well, what you were saying before. I mean, just and we'll come back to just the logistics
right.
of getting the guns and ammo into the hands of these individuals.
Right.
But
people who can't even leave their neighborhoods on the bus
right.
somehow are afforded the opportunity to get
right.
weapons.
Military-grade weapons.
Right.
Armor-piercing rounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fully automatic clips, extended clips. I you know, some of the times... A lot of these people, they'll make the YouTube videos.
And I'm going to New York.
Oh, I was gonna play that.
Oh no
you
way!
Keep, man, you keep you keep oh. messing up my cues, man. Gosh, see,
it just popped in my head.
Yeah, I'm mine too. I can't front. I just figured it out seconds before you. But yeah, that's a lot of logistics, and a lot of these people are not the most literate, not the most people who are in a position to navigate to secure not only. Because it's hard to get a legal weapon. People think, oh, extremely. America's just saturated with guns. But it's not that easy to get it's easier to get a weapon illegally than it is legal. Right, but I'm saying spots. Illegally.
But nobody here is going out to, you know, I don't know.
But they're able to track people down for pirating songs off the internet with billions of people on the internet. But they can't track, you know, illegal, illicit firearms.
I tell you what, you get caught in the city... spray painting a building
mm-hmm.
and see what happens to you.
Yeah.
You know.
But let's return to that 17 to 25 window.
Right.
You know, that is
it's huge.
Early
it's
to
very,
young adulthood. That's when you're pretty telling. Much laying the foundations and trajectory for your entire life. Most people are, if they're not getting married and procreating, they're pretty much courting the person. They're pretty much giving themselves established economically.
Between and 17 those very 25, you're going to have
year,
your first child.
Going to college. Right. So basically, black males in the city of Chicago, and you could say, you can take it to Memphis, you could take it to Oklahoma, you could take it to Kansas City, you could take it to Texas, the wards, and Louisiana.
Man, you could take it to Petersburg, Virginia. Which is where I'm from, very small city in central mm-hmm. Virginia. I looked at the top 30 murder capitals per capita, Petersburg, Virginia. Number 15.
Where was Kansas City?
I didn't even see that.
Because I remember back in the 90s, Kansas
City. But
that's
you. That's amazing.
Was number one in the nation.
Yeah,
per capita homicides when I was coming up there, but and the things I saw, man. So basically, black males are literally, this is not like a figure of speech, are being lost in the prime of their lives.
Right. Statistically.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is just a generation ago. These young people, even though a small fraction of them, you know, less than 20% would be going off to higher ed, they would be going into the trades.
Skilled labor.
You know, this is the city of the what do they call it? The
steel
the,
mills.
The back of the yards.
Back of the
this yard. Is uh-huh. a this city is a shipping hub. It was a shipping hub,
right.
a manufacturing hub, a distributive hub for the entire country,
what
especially
packing,
the Midwest. Meat packing, steel, textiles, canning. When canning was really mm-hmm. big, like way out in on 79th. They had these huge canning factories where they were processed foods.
Yeah.
Illinois is a big agricultural state, and a lot of the commodities, the corn, the wheat, will come into
the
city to be processed. The commodities market down mm-hmm. there with the goddess of Ceres, the goddess of,
right,
of fertilities on the statue on the high rise. So this black people came here.
For those
and were integrated. Right, and they were used actually to be a buffer for the white working class. To keep their ambitions at bay. It's like, well, if you don't want to do it, I can get a group of niggers in here for half of what I'm paying you. So they always, it was class and race have always been, you know, the white elites have always used race and class issue to play the working class off of each other.
But that 17 through 25 age group is exactly when those young men would have been moving into those.
Right. But all of that's gone.
Gone, totally gone.
All of that's gone. I mean, if you travel through now, a place where there were hundreds of men manufacturing and working with their hands, now you've got Pilates
and
juice bars.
Well, the rub
in
too
these
is
old warehouses and factories.
Everywhere that those industries were set up in South Chicago, on the West Side, were where all those industries were.
Right.
Now it's
blighted.
Blighted, and this is where the crime rates are.
Exactly where the economic opportunities now. This was inevitable. I mean, if we study the Industrial Revolution, there's always been violent transitions. And the violence always starts at the bottom and works its way up.
Mm.
You know, when the Industrial Revolution first started, they wanted to get the serfs off the land. You know, and they got the serfs off the land and said, you know, we can industrialize agriculture, where the majority of humanity worked growing food that most of them consumed. It wasn't a retail consumer culture back then. And then from the 1400s going into the 1800s, there was this violent upheaval and people being driven into the cities. And that's where the first slums were created out of Europe. You know, black folks are literally in living now on the south side of Chicago are living basically an 18th century.
Charles Dickens book.
Right. These are idle people who are not ready to go into the mercantile economy. And what did they tell them back then? You need to get a new skill, you know. And so so you had these basically what they're called in some cultures the goyim, the useless eaters,
right?
What Marx called surplus population. You have surplus population that are of no economic niche.
Right.
They're human resources that no industry or government can exploit. They have no use for them. So they're idle workers, and then you turn around, you idle these workers, you mothball these workers, but just because I don't have a job doesn't mean I can't eat in other ways. And then on the top of that, the provisions and methods that they develop to sustain themselves, since they can't participate in the dominant economy, are made illegal.
Criminalized.
So you further drive them underground so that they can't employ local institutions, the courts,
well, here's a
the
good
police,
example.
To protect their means of commerce.
Here's a good example of that. It's probably been about 15 years now.
Right.
I used to, I had friends in school, and they were from Baltimore. So I would go visit them in Baltimore. Met a girl there, dated her for a while. So I would go to Baltimore quite a bit. And one of the things that kind of threw me off, I would come in on the Greyhound and you would have these guys running up to you talking about, you want a cab, I'm a hack.
Right.
So it was this underground economy
that
black people, mostly black people, participated in as a free agent, taxi drivers.
And it was illegal. They had the same thing with the dollar vans and the gypsy cabs all over Brooklyn. I had a woman in Canarsie, since we bragged. I dated this Haitian sister in Canarsie. And, you know, the trains don't really get out that far. So I'd take the two train Flatbush, you know, and take that all the way out to, like, Brooklyn. And you get out, and brothers would be there, and they, between $1 and $5, take you anywhere you want to go. Mm-hmm. In Canarsie.
So now they figured out a way to subvert that. Just like, and now me. You got Uber.
Yeah. But and now it's legal. The same thing that they were locking cats up for.
Yep.
The dollar vans.
So that's a
and
perfect
gypsy
example
cabs
of criminalizing
and
behaviors. Yep. You know.
Until white folks figure out how to make money at it. And then it becomes not only legal, but it's mainstream. It's hip. It's corporate. It's the gig economy.
Yeah.
You know, when they figure out. Same thing. My paternal grandmother had a boarding house. You have a house.
Now they have.
You got some extra rooms, and people come through town. Plus, black folks couldn't stay at the normal hotels.
Right.
So you give them a room, and that was a serious thing. Everybody had a boarder. There's a lot of like Harlem Renaissance writings or like Toni Morrison
the
writings.
Invisible Man.
They talk about these black women who had
boarders houses.
Boarding.
Yeah.
And I remember my especially if you were an older woman, because their children would become adults and move out the house, and you got extra rooms.
Yep.
And so now Airbnb done took that.
A legit hustle.
It can't even get into weed.
Oh, it's a wrap. That's, yeah.
You know, so all of these things that were illegal, that we used, that were criminalized.
Cannabis.
Right. That were criminalized are now mainstream, corporatized, and fully legal.
And, you know, you still have people in prison for engaging in these activities that are now legal.
Right.
You know, I'm sure there's probably some dude pissed sitting in the jail in Baltimore somewhere like, yo, I'm locked up and this fool, you know, gets to drive up.
And Lyft and Uber.
Right.
Coming all through town. Right.
Right. And, you know, it's and those things are always a pyramid scheme. You know, they.
Oh, yes.
The people who.
We can't even get into the gig economy. And we really need to talk about that. We should talk about that.
Don't be fooled, people.
But, right. So black men were not. It was a multiple strike. First of all, you're locked out of the dominant economy after being propagandized and indoctrinated that you got to be the breadwinner, that you're the man, the head of household. You got to bring home the bacon and all that. And so you set them up, and then on top of that, you cultivate consciously and deliberately cultivate into their culture crass, obscene materialism.
Yes.
And that was not by accident.
And you foster dissension through gangs, and 'cause that plays a heavy part in the violence in Chicago. But those gangs were fostered by the government.
Right. And funded.
You know, they were getting grants and, you know.
Right. And here's the thing. There's never been a COINTELPRO against the gangbangers. The only people that ever get the only organizations and black formations that get systematically destroyed are those that work in our best interest. They can take out the Panthers. They can take out the Black Liberation Army. They can take out the African OAU, Organization of Afro-American Unity. They can take out UNIA. Universal Negro Improvement Association, all these bodies of black people just get utterly deconstructed, whether they decapitate them or they take them out from the bottom up, infiltrate them and obliterate them from within.
Right.
But they just can't get around to stopping the gangbangers who are engaged in legal activities, because these organizations that I'm talking about were criminalized and attacked, and they weren't even engaged in any illegal. They were fully operating within their constitutional rights.
Absolutely.
Of to gather and to advocate and lobby for their interests of their people and their community.
The gun laws that the NRA are fighting against are a direct result of
the Black Panther Party,
especially in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, so once African people, black people started arming themselves, then it became a problem.
Exactly.
We need gun control.
Exactly. So the gangs are, and that's why I so vehemently, and a lot of people beef with me on this, say that you can't be revolutionary but gangster. Gangsterism is anti-revolutionary. And when every time you look at a revolutionary, progressive, socialist, communist, liberationist, anti-colonial culture, every movement, whether it's in communist Russia with the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks, when you're talking about the Operation Gladio and just look this stuff up. It's all available. It's not even hidden anymore.
Right.
In Europe, where the imperialist powers and the capitalists were working with the mafia, La Cosa Nostra, when they went into Africa with fighting, whether in South Africa or with Namibia, they always the established power always goes to the criminal element.
Absolutely,
always.
Right.
And I've never seen any gangster become revolutionary without abandoning the gangster element. From Malcolm X,
right.
It's probably the most wonder. And people like to talk about Malcolm X's. Oh, Malcolm X was in the street.
Malcolm was not
building nation building at the same time he was pimping.
Right.
He was not nation building at the same time he was getting high on heroin.
Right. You can't exploit your people and right. claim that you're building your
right.
people.
And he said, I abet. And so I'm not saying you cannot reform and become from a gangster to a revolutionary, but you can't be a gangster and a revolutionary.
Well, because a gangster is an inherent predator.
Right.
They're sole purpose
it's is a low-level capitalist.
Right, is to gain as much fiat currency as right. possibly can stack underneath their mattress.
Right, at the expense of anybody.
Anybody involved.
Right. And
you know, these guys at the heyday of drugs, I mean, they would have houses full of just paper money.
Right.
You know, for yeah. what?
And I've never, and there are gangsters, brothers in the streets that are dear to me, that are very personal to me, that are related to me by blood.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to fantasize about who they are and their impact on right. the larger community.
Right. And they might even agree with the rhetoric
right.
you're saying. Like, yeah, brother, you know, da 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 da. But that doesn't dissuade right. them from their activities.
Because if we start sure. to win, then their revenue streams go down. Because the prostitution, the drug trafficking, the extortion,
right.
the things that are gangster. The things that gangster engage in is stuff that we would as we start to succeed and rise up.
You can't con an honest Joe.
Right.
So
and the average gang, and that's why a lot of these gangster rappers, they used to remember, they admired Bush, 50 Cent and Diddy. And I'm not even saying that these guys have legitimate gangster credentials, but that's their persona. And they always, oh, Bush is a gangster. And you go look at Trump before Trump became political. Back when he was just an avaricious, parasitic capitalist, he was always cheek to cheek with Russell Simmons right. and P. Diddy and all these guys because they have the same fundamental value system.
I posted a video of Donald Trump, all the little goofy parts he's had in movies
right.
and kind of like the commentary behind why he was in these movies. But his whole existence has been an attempt to exploit the propaganda machine.
Right.
You know, he's always jumping in
and
front of the camera.
And he's good at it.
Yeah.
Better than he is at real estate.
What's up,
and
Aaron?
And casinos.
Arian Mallory.
And so, even with the, and that's the, and so, but then again, a lot of dudes that I know that started selling drugs, they were buying toothpaste and socks.
With the drug money.
You know, they weren't balling. They weren't buying yachts.
Right.
They weren't buying, you know.
One of the most selfish dudes I knew, man. I mean, well, that I've known a few guys who were, you know, quote unquote drug dealers. Man, those dudes was tight with their money.
Right. They weren't
You know, this fool wanted me to drive him from Petersburg to Richmond, which is like a 30-minute drive, right. which is a long ways in a, you know, southern
you know
you're like right
you're
awesome like
country,
30 miles
country.
30 minutes man I mean and dude will give you like $5 you're like okay all right man thanks you know or my other homie man oh my god you know you would hate to have to go pick him up
right
because he's not going to give you any gas money right. and he's going to take like a half an hour coming out
right
like these dudes were not about balling out that's a false narrative.
Right, that the rappers
from
perpetuate.
Rap videos,
you know,
right.
that's so, I mean, it's just kinds of sets up. And this is another aspect of the violence, because these individuals have been forcibly.
And realistically,
uh-huh.
you put someone in a situation where I can make $200 a week legitimately mm-hmm. at a job, you know, it might be flipping burgers,
mm-hmm.
or I can make $200 a week standing on the street corner getting shot at.
$200 a week, $200 an hour.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, if, comparatively speaking, I mean, you could, society should be stratified where that shouldn't be such an appealing
Oh, right.
Job. And $200 an hour doesn't cover, I mean, it's, you have overhead. You don't just sell drugs and they magically reappear. You have to go and buy more. So it's, you know, you're a small business owner. Right. Whereas, you know, you can get clear $200 after tax. Don't have to worry about getting shot at by your coworkers.
Right.
Don't have to worry about getting arrested on your job.
Right.
Don't have to worry about the elements being, you know, standing out on street corners and hiding in alleys. You know, logically, given an opportunity to actually have gainful employment, people aren't going to choose gainful employment.
Absolutely.
It's this false narrative.
It's been
like,
demonstrated over and over again.
It's this false narrative that, you know, they want to do this.
Right.
These people want to be criminals. These people want to be out there because they get to have a big car. They get to have, you know. But people who join the army can ball out. You know, guys who join the military get cars with rims.
And travel the world.
Right. So given opportunities, people are going to choose.
But then,
but you
also
don't have that opportunity.
This is the thing about. Because everybody, and I don't think we're in a position to really condemn them from a certain point of view, because all of us are engaged in violence and profiting from violence.
Indeed.
It's just some of us have a sterilizing distance between the violence that makes our lives possible.
Right.
If you had to go into the sweatshop and get your phone from the sweatshop.
Right.
And you had to walk through all the pollution, the toxic chemicals, and smack the little Asian kid, the little Indonesian kid across
change.
The back of the head and say, are you done with my phone yet? You got to get my phone up. But
we have
people that do that for us.
Right.
If you had to go to the slaughterhouse.
And rustle that cow.
And and slit the jugular of that cow or put that live chicken into a boiling vat.
Pluck them seeds.
And do that yourself.
Feathers off. Right.
And if you had to go to Sri Lanka. And walk into the textile mills and say, where's my daughter's palm jet? And kick some, you know, malnourished young girl, you know, some malnourished 12-year-old who's, you know, being sexually exploited
Becky
by the factory staff.
Becky would be wearing some different things to the prom.
Exactly. But I'm saying if we had to directly engage in the violence that we profit from,
right.
We got other people to do it for us. Mm-hmm. So we all essentially, especially living in the United States, we're all kingpins in a certain right. We all have slaves. But because we have money, because we have resources and credit cards and things like that, we're able to outsource everything.
Right. And we're a safe distance from the suffering.
We're a distance. We are so distant from the violence sustains our life that we can walk around and say, I'm not a violent person. I don't attack people.
Nope.
But everything in your life, from the land you live on to the car you drive to the oil and the gasoline that goes into the car to the clothing you wear to the coltan in your phone, your screen, from the pollution
from
that
the
you
diamond
emit,
ring you just
all
gave,
of that
groovy.
Is saturated in the blood of people in the third world.
Absolutely.
So before you look at a dude, it's like, I don't have enough money. I don't have the resources, education or social standing to where I can profit from the violence and let other people do. I got to do my own dirt.
Right.
I got to ride on my enemies for myself. I can't call the police to do it for me.
Exactly.
Because every landlord, every single landlord in America is a freaking gangster, because the landlord knows you don't pay your rent, then I can call armed thugs to come and throw you in the streets. Mm-hmm. I don't have to do it myself. And the landlord can go to church. He can receive awards. He can be a dignified community member, and he's throwing families in the street.
Right. That was a big point of contention.
At gunpoint. I'm sorry.
That was a big point of contention in the book, The Invisible Man.
Right.
They were.
I love that
that's
book.
Where he got started, because they were evicting these people from there. I mean, so, and it's really interesting because the same.
Right.
It's like you read in this book and it's like it was done in like the 40s.
Right.
But it's like the same exact conditions exist. It's just amazing to me.
Right.
That's why I found the Uncle Tom Cabin book pretty interesting, because it's like very parallel behavior patterns, and but it's because people are still oppressed
and things don't change. Right. I mean, you read the Communist Manifesto. We were talking
same
about
thing.
People with premonition.
Right.
It could have been written yesterday.
Yep, exactly.
You know, with what he's talking about, you know, corporations
and it's more relevant
in the
because
ecosystem
at the time
that was a theory. It wasn't
right. Capitalism hadn't got his talents into his claws into the fabric of society quite yet. It was still realistic to even have an opinion against capitalism. Nowadays, it's understood that capitalism.
It's like air.
Right.
It's just,
you know, and you're weird if you have a dissenting opinion about capitalism.
Right. Oh, so we're past the break. Q4 Radio, AM 1680. We're going to take a musical break, and let's come back and talk about some specific solutions to the violence, or call if there in. Are solutions, or even if the violence is actually a problem.
And you guys can call in 312-985-7834.
All right.
We'd love to hear from that. You.
Yes, call in.
Call in.
Holla at your boys. Shout out. Again, King Dita boom, and Bro boom. Diallo.
Shout out to everybody's watching.
Worldwide. 1, 2, 3. The crew is called BDP. And if you want to go to the tip top, stop the violence in hip hop. Y-O. As I pick up the pen, as my thoughts emerge, these are those words. I glance at the paper to know what's going on. Someone's doing wrong, the story goes on. Mary Lou just had a baby, someone else decapitated. The drama of the world shouldn't keep us so frustrated. I look, but it doesn't coincide with my books. Social studies will not speak upon political crooks. It's just the presidents and all the money they spent, all the things they invent, and how the house is so immaculate. They create missiles while families eating gristle. Then they get upset when the press blows the whistle. Phone calls are made, profiles are kept low. Your temper with some jobs, not a press's control. Not only newspapers, but every single station. You only get to hear the president is on vacation. But stay calm, there's no need for alarm. You say goodbye to your mom and you're off to Vietnam. You shoot the kill, come back and you're a veteran. But how many veterans are out there peddling? No telling, cause they continue selling. As quiet as it's kept, I won't go into depth. You could talk about Nigeria, people used to laugh at you. Now I take a look, I see USA for Africa. To stop all this confusion, rewrite the constitution, change the drug in which you use it. Rewrite the constitution or the Emancipation Proclamation. We fight inflation, yet the president's still on vacation. BDP Posse. I say 1, 2, 3. The crew is called BDP. And if you wanna go to the tip top, stop the violence in hip hop. Y-O. This might sound a little strange to you. Well, here's the reason I came to you. We gotta put our heads together and stop the violence. Cause real bad boys move in silence. When you're in a club, you come to chill out. Not watch someone's blood just spill out. That's what these other people want to see. Another race fight endlessly. You know we're being watched. You know we're being seen. Some wish to destroy this scene. Core hip hop. But I won't drop, not I or Scott LaRock. Well, here is the message that we bring today. Hip-hop will surely decay if we as a people don't stand up and say, stop the violence! 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 I say 1, 2, 3, the crew is called BDP. And if you wanna go to the tip top, stop the violence in hip hop. Why yo? BDP and me, we step into the party, tap celebrity. Say when we coming in down, we never have to pay a fee. Cause that's cause we got R-E-S-P-E-C-T. I have this one wife, her name is Miss Melody. Although I'm from the Bronx, she from the Brooklyn Posse. I tell you I look like this and then I tell you some of that. Sometimes I comb my hair on, sometimes I wear a hat. Sometimes I'm in a Mercedes and sometimes I'm in a plane. Sometimes I find myself up on the number 2 train. Some people look at me and see negativity. Some people look at me and see positivity. But when I see myself, I see creativity. So if I can't create, well then I make some money. So I just put your hands up if you're out here getting paid. So I just put your hands up if you're out here getting paid. 1, 2, 3. The crew is called BDP. And if you wanna go to the tip top, stop the violence in hip hop. Y-O. BDP.
going to New York, New York. Well, I'm driving my car cross country with 100 guns and about 6G. Been driving through a town, been see two cops. They're looking at me funny like they really want to stop. Been just turned my head and gone on my way. Put hip hopping out of tape and press play. Me get one block and me hear pull over. The guns are in the trunk with a fin cover. They ask me for ID, driver's license prefer. Me ask them was I breaking any law, officer. They said, oh yes, your past county line. Niggas in these here a puss now is a crime. I said, is that so? And pop back me nine. Bust two shots and out a boy head top. His knees just a buckle and his body a drop. We put the car in drive and they did not stop. When I get to New York, I'm gonna set up shop. But I got 100 gun, 200 clips. Going to New York, New York. I got 100 gun, 200 clips. Going to New York, New York. Me in a hotel off 95 North. Everything's fine, and yes, me on course. Me walk to a bathroom, take a little leak. But right out the window, I can hear the cops speak. We have the place around and we're about to move in. That's when I pick up my 9 and just begin. Pop, 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 first cop I hit the ground. Pop, 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 second cop I go down. Me jump out the window, try not to make a sound. Me run to the car, gunfire all around. I start up the engine, bust the barricade. All because illegally I want to get paid. Pop, 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 there goes my tire. Me spun out of control, the car caught on fire. Me jump out the car, put my hands in the air. Cops just surrounding me with pistols everywhere. They put me in the backseat of their car handcuffed. Out them chests like they're big, rough, and tough. A cop come and said, you'll never sell your guns now. I said, it doesn't matter, you'll sell them anyhow. You take the guns from me, you sell them for a fee. Any way you put it, they'll get in the city. So still, I got 100 gun, 200 clips. Going to New York, New York. I got 100 gun, 200 clips. Going to New York, New York. I got 100 gun, 200 clips. Going to New York, New York. I got 100 gun, 200 clips. Going to New York, New York.
I say.
He says he's mean.
You know what I mean?
He's mean, he's mean.
Mean.
He's mean, he's mean.
You know what I mean?
He's mean, he's mean.
I'm meaner than.
That's it, that's it.
I mean what I say.
He do, he do.
I'm so mean, I had a dream of beating myself up. Broke my nose, I broke my hand, I wrestled myself to the ground and then I choked myself to death and broke the choke and woke up. Arr! I mean, you know what I mean. If you know what I mean, you'll know what I mean. I mean, meaner than I sure am mean. Yeah, me.
Yo, yo.
All right, we back live. Q4
live
Radio.
And
that was from Stop the Violence from the My Philosophy Boogie Down production. And then another from Edutainment, 100 Guns. You take the guns from me, you sell them for a fee. any way you cut it, it'll get in the city. So still, I got 100 guns, 200 clips going to New York. And then followed by the King Dita theme song, I Mean, from the soundtrack of the Popeye movie from, what, 83?
I choked myself to death.
I mean, I'm so mean, I had a dream of beating myself up.
Yep.
That's how mean.
And I woke up and right, apologized. Right,
okay. So that was a musical selection. We are inappropriately discussing violence.
Yeah. Well.
There's too much snickering and chuckling going on.
Right.
All right, because this is a serious issue.
Now we're gonna,
let's get into the arena of solutions. You know, the people who fight against violence annoy the crap out of me because they're not fighting for peace. They're fighting for pacification.
Right.
Because I would think that if you're going to fight against violence, or as Amos Wilson called it, the psychodynamics of black self-annihilation in service of white domination, if you're going to fight. You know, when I first saw this book, it took me a whole year to buy before I bought Black on Black Violence by Amos N. Wilson. Because I just saw the Black on Black Violence and I'm like, there's no such thing as Black on Black Violence. How dare he write a book called Black on Black Violence? So I just walked past it. I would look past it on the bookshelf. At Du Bois
books that
in Kansas City.
You know that they make book titles to be sensational?
Yes. Right. And I was judging a book by its cover.
Literally.
And I do judge books by the cover. I think it's the wonderful, wonderful thing to do.
So make sure your cover art is on point.
It'll work. Right. You know. So I came to the book later than I could have. But the reason the so-called anti-violence activists is because they never have a systemic analysis. How can you be anti-violence? I've literally interacted with people who do anti-violence work, and one of the routes or solutions that they give to young people is to join the military. They'll have a list of opportunities, going to college, career centers, the military. There are so many opportunities. One of the ways that some anti-violence activist groups and organizations offer to black youth to avoid violence is to join the U.S. military, not even the Peace Corps, but the military. And there are several of them that not only do not have a critique of capitalism, they encourage youth to get further invested in the capitalist system.
Indeed.
Getting educated, buying stocks, and being full participants in the system of capitalism. You know, and another anti-violence group and movement, they brought Barack Obama to Chicago to speak at Hyde Park High School after a series of high-profile shootings. When one of the young ladies who marched in his inaugural parade was killed literally in his backyard.
Yeah.
And so he came there to speak to young black men about violence. And this is an individual, the most militant black man in the world, with his own daily personal kill list, who has authorized the illegal execution of U.S. citizens. Look up Anwar Alaki, without trial, without even bringing charges against him. So Obama is a war criminal and a constitutional criminal. And they brought him. So there's so many internal inherent contradictions in this violence and this so-called anti-violence. So I think the first thing you want to do if you want to deal with violence in the hood is deal with the anti-violence activists and movements and not-for-profits. I think that's the first thing you do. Clean up your mess, because a lot of them are hypocritical and not in a real position. They have a liberal, superficial complaint. They don't have a radical analysis. They're not trying to stop violence. They're trying to pacify black youth, which is not the same as bringing peace.
Well, a quick solution to this would be somehow figure out how to keep guns out of people's hands. I mean, if 83.4% of the people who are being killed by a particular thing,
right,
it would be advantageous to look at that.
But we know prohibition doesn't work. Prohibition of drugs, prohibition of alcohol, prohibition of guns. Prohibition just doesn't work. And what it's going to do is, what are you going to do, have stiffer fines? It used to be in Chicago, they just recently changed this, an automatic 5 years on top of whatever other charges you got. If you're walking down the street or committing a crime with a gun, you get, and this still stands in New York, if you have an illegal weapon, you get an automatic 5 years tacked onto whatever other sentences and charges the prosecutor can get to stick to you. So what, are you going to double that to 10 years?
No. What I'm saying is figure out how exactly, if you want to solve it, you know what I'm saying? Like if I had heart disease,
right?
I would have to figure out exactly how I'm getting heart disease,
right,
and then change those behaviors. So we got to figure out where the gun's coming from, who's bringing them in.
The government is bringing them in.
Well, then it's not going to stop until the government.
And if you look at the most popular guns, the Glock 9s, all of the Glock series, the Uzis, the Mac 10s, all the guns the rappers rap Uzi, about, AK. Those guns are all manufactured in Israel.
Okay, now we get
Israel is one of the world's top small weapons
manufacturers.
So, and the reason why is because Israel, the United States has limits on. Because the United States is number one for weapons manufacturers and weapons deals, but they prefer to sell weapons systems. They want to sell F-15s. They want to sell military-grade weapons. So the United States has literally outsourced small weapons to Israel. And even though many of the people who have a controlling stake in those companies, so Israel produces all these small arms, the kind of guns criminals use, gangs use, whereas the United States sells weapons that juntas and dictatorships use. And so Israel makes a large profit off these guns, and they make more profit per gun selling it illegally than they do legally.
Right. It's like
and
cigarettes.
So the CIA.
Loose cigarettes.
Right. So, I mean, this is a profit motive. And as Amos Wilson said, not in this book.
It's going too good for them to stop.
Right, not in this book, but in his other book, The Falsification of Black Consciousness. And he stated that if you want to understand a problem, you can't look at who suffers. You have to look at who profits.
Boom, right.
So you have to, even if you want to say, well, I want to get guns off the street, then you got to deal with capitalism.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We can actually solve these problems.
Right.
It's just it's going too good for them to stop.
Right.
You know, who wants to stop a cash cow?
Right. Everybody profits from this.
They profit from the dysfunction that's created in communities as a result of the violence. They profit from medically.
Yeah.
You know, from the damage done from the gun violence.
Yeah.
They're profiting from the guns themselves. You know, so like I said, if 84% of a crime is happening as a result of something, it should be clear what needs to be done to stop that thing. But we pile on all these other things to make it to vilify the victim, you know, as opposed to so it'll stop when it's advantageous for them to stop it.
Then it will never stop.
Then it'll never stop.
But that's why I think if you're an anti, because I mean, I have a long history. I can't, because most of the things I criticize, I at one time did. You know, if I was 21, 22, I'd be a hotep, as in the popular sense.
Okay.
You know, and
you
in
probably
my
was.
Analysis and my revolutionary and political evolution, I've touched on every stage.
Right.
And so used to be a run-of-the-mill liberal. We just need more love, you know. And I was a member. Go look. You can look it up. You know, when if I ever start to beef with
run around hugging people.
If I ever start to beef with the general or with the prince, they can go find pictures of me standing cheek to cheek in some protest line. You know,
look at
the animals. Save the animals.
Look at them.
Right.
Crying.
You know. So anyway, I used to be a member of the Stop the Violence Coalition, and we did a lot of the same super. But then, as I'm in a group, I'm like, wait a minute. Why are we starting at the tail end of this? You know, by the time you're dealing with the gun in the hand of the young person, pointing it at another, that's the outcome. That's not the problem. That's the symptom. That's the byproduct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're looking at somebody with cancer and they were like, well, I'm in so much pain. The pain is a byproduct of a process. That's a byproduct of another process. That's the byproduct of another process. So I'm like, why don't we get to the root of this?
And you can treat that cancer in that person.
Right.
But you can also look at the causation of the cancer.
The nuclear power plant up the street from their house.
And prevent it from happening to anyone else.
But you want to go to cancer patient to cancer patient to cancer patient, chasing down every individual case instead of dealing with the root cause.
Absolutely.
And that's what, as I became, my development, I became more radical. If you start to deal with this gun violence, you're dealing with multinational profits. You're not dealing with just bad kids that don't want to get ahead in life, that don't want to be antisocial, violent youth, or super predators,
like I said,
as Hillary Clinton called it.
There's no gun shops in the hood.
No.
There's a lot of liquor stores and churches.
Oh, yes.
But there's no gun shops. So where are the guns coming from? And it's
they're,
not.
They're coming. And, they're coming from Israel.
And like I said.
And they're being brought here by the same freights that bring us our VCRs.
Yep.
And they're smuggled into the country.
And I know.
A lot of times they're brought into the country legally and then sold on the, what do they call the gun show?
Circuit, gun shows. Yeah.
Right. And so they relinquish the paper
trail. Which are a lot easier to get guns at gun shows.
And then you have a lot of people just go over to Indiana, buy the gun legally, and then come here and flip it. And they're trying to give stronger penalties for doing that.
So what happened? Right. So what happens, because these young people do not leave their neighborhood.
Right.
We would take groups of kids just downtown. They live on, you know, Super South Side. And we would take maybe a 10-minute, 15-minute ride on the Metro train for $2. And we come out the station. This kid looks around in awe. And he's like, man, I like this Chicago. You know? And it's like, this is the same Chicago you live in, bro.
Right.
You know, but, and you have access to it. But they're so disenfranchised. So that's what I'm saying. Those guns are coming to them. They're not going out seeking. So to vilify a person that is being brought, and their children.
Right.
You know.
Who have history of malnutrition.
Violence.
Violence, sexual exploitation.
Disenfranchisement.
Substandard resources from educational to housing.
Right.
So they're not just children. They're traumatized children.
Exactly.
You know, they're emotionally
who are force
children.
Fed a diet of social violence
of murder, consume,
right.
murder, consume. So it's
and that's just the rap music. We're not even talking about the violence that, you know, these cavalier cowboy-esque type characters that we're forced to idealize. You know, Jason Bourne has a problem. He goes and kicks some booty.
Right.
You know, if. Name one of the Tom Cruise has a problem. He's pulling a gun out the back of his pants and he's blasting the bad guys.
Schwarzenegger got a problem.
With
he
no
ripped
penalties.
Your arm off and beat you to death with your own arm
with no penalties. You know, these guys kill 100 people in a movie and they go home like, "Whew, man, I made it through."
Right, and not only that,
it's so bizarre.
The soldiers being a lot of these young people like, "I'm a soldier. I'm a warrior." Just the militarist culture. This is a militarist, theocratic militarist
and like
society.
You just said,
it's the opposite of what it claims to be.
The solution is to join the army.
Right.
I mean, because they're looked up as heroes in our society.
Right.
You know, they're people who are in the military.
They fall for our freedoms, which is a myth. I've always asked people, what name a particular freedom that the U.S. military or a soldier has secured or directly defended for you?
Right.
It's a myth, another myth. So
that's a solution. Get rid of the... Figure out a way to make multinational smuggling rings not want to profit from.
But then, right, you have to deconstruct the whole profit motive system. Because if money can be made at it, it's going to be done in this system. Whether that's giving guns to poor people in the ghetto or trafficking young girls to sell to pedophiles.
Methamphetamines.
If money can be made doing it, because that's the society is driven by the profit motive.
Get money.
So getting money, and so I'm not saying don't do the violence intervention on the ground. But if you're only doing violence intervention on the ground, if you're only dealing with the symptoms of a larger problem, but you don't have a critique of capitalism and you don't have any means or agenda to dismantle the institutions of capitalism or at least figure out a way for people to exist separate from but parallel to the dominant economy in a humane and just way, then all you're doing, the system is going to give you as many violence perpetrators and as many violence victims as you can do. And that's another reason why a lot of these not-for-profit pimps profit from the misery and dysfunction as much as the multinational corporations
Absolutely.
And the governments do.
There'd be because, no rainbow push unless
right.
it was some
And so, right, they
conditions.
Profit off of our misery. The amount of political influence and donations that they bring in is directly proportional to the number of homicides. Flager just did a march with 700-plus crosses,
right.
this big
this
spectacle.
Clown.
And this guy is on the national and international scene based on our violence. So our suffering is their currency.
Right, his fame is
that's
based
their currency.
On him being a good white guy who
right.
helps
so
out.
There's really no incentive for the anti-violence activists to truly stop the violence.
Right.
Because then they become irrelevant.
And then another component you said is to become educated. Mm-hmm. So as a solution, become educated.
Right.
But then you live in a city where they're closing hundreds of schools
right.
every year.
But Umar's about to start making us. So don't even trip off the school closings, because those Umar schools, I mean, any day now.
Well, the thing about the schools as well, you make these sweeping reforms, right. and they sound good. We're closing all the projects in the city. We're closing all these underperforming schools in the city. So what ends up happening is you don't look at the culture of the people. These young men and women are forced to then interact with people who have been placed up as their mortal enemies
right.
through the gang culture.
Right.
So you put people from warring communities, and you force them to be in a social setting.
That actually happened to me.
And it's going to be violent.
That happened to me. I was at Southeast Junior High School, and I got into some trouble there. So they expelled me from Southeast Junior High School, which was in my neighborhood. 75th and Monroe, East Hill Village, shout out.
Bloop, bloop.
And they sent me to Martin Luther King Junior High,
which
was way outside my territory.
You know,
but now, I wasn't a roller. You know, I wasn't in the gang. But, you know, it didn't matter. Your neighborhood defined who you was and who you was down with and who your enemies were.
Right.
So my greatest fear was that they're going to find out where I live. So I used to be a really vocal and outgoing kid. I was in different clubs and different activities in school, you know, and because they criminalized black youth, and something that if a white kid did, he would have maybe got a slap on the wrist, mm-hmm. maybe a day of in-school suspension, and that would have been the end of it. They kicked me out of school and then sent me in literally from the frying pan into the fire. I get in trouble for fighting, then they send me into a place where I could be victimized, right? Even more aggressively in junior high school. And so anyway, it was like, man, maybe because this was halfway through the school year. So it was like 2 weeks before the end of the school year. And some dude was like, "You live in the village." And I'm like, oh,
dun, dun,
the day I feel. And can you imagine every day going with that fear
trauma.
That somebody just might like, dude, where you live? You just popped up out of nowhere. So I experienced that. But, I wasn't gang affiliated, you know. And that's another thing with the people in these quote unquote bad neighborhoods. It's only a fraction of the young people actually engaged in a
right,
lot of these
right.
activities.
And that defines their.
Right.
Well, so here's me being totally oblivious to gang culture. I'm from the suburbs of a lot of places because my dad was in the military. But, you know, so that's already an insulated
So you were
existence.
Affiliated with the biggest gang in the world.
Yeah, I suppose.
Global gangsterism.
So, you know, my naivete coming here is like, you know, working with kids in South Chicago, and they're like, we can't go,
right.
cross the street.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't cross the street? Because as a kid, man, I was everywhere.
Yeah.
In my city, you know, we'd go any neighborhood, didn't matter, you know. But it was like, it was such a culture shock to me. But those are the things that, so if I was creating policy, if I actually had good intentions, I would have to take that into consideration.
Right.
I wouldn't just make these sweeping cuts and sweeping repositionings of communities because you're setting them up for the violence, you know?
Right. Well,
so you close a school and then everybody has to cross that boundary, that street,
right.
that line of demarcation to go to school. So like you were saying, you like every day. You're waiting for the shoe to drop, you know, and that's trauma.
Yeah,
and
of course my grade suffered, and then when they found out where I lived, of course I stopped showing up at school, so you know I missed a lot of school time. Ended up having to go to summer school to get into the ninth grade,
and then they did,
and
this,
you know, and just imagine, and again, me, I'm not even in a gang, I'm
right.
not even, you know, selling drugs,
right? Yep.
And so just imagine that if, you know, like we had stated earlier in the show, a lot of these young drug dealers are buying underwear and toothpaste. They're not chartering jets to
right.
the French Riviera.
To go turn up.
Right.
That's a different type of.
And that's a myth, too. Like, all drug dealers are rich people. Many of them have no hard or investments, no assets.
Right.
And then the small fraction of them who actually do.
Definitely don't have a healthcare plan.
Exactly. and so even the young people who aren't even affiliated with that, the young people who do what these activists tell them to do, to go to school and stay in church
right.
and keep your head down and work hard, they still are still traumatized and still affected throughout their lives.
So you have the guns. You have the education.
Well, a quick solution to the guns is to encourage and promote them to shoot.
Here we go.
Other people. If black youth were out here, became politicized, and they were shooting at the same people the Black Liberation Army was shooting at, if they were shooting at, aiming their guns at the same people that the Black Panthers were aiming their guns, if they were following Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Guns, or Deacons of Self-Defense, if they were aiming the guns properly, the guns would be off the streets. They would have a gun registry, gun sweeps, gun limit, a bullet, you know, they would
They'd be tracking
all
bullets.
Technology and resources. So the reason, I mean, there's no real incentive for gun prohibition.
Right.
You can't fight violence without fighting capitalism. You're not, what you're doing is imposing pacification. And capitalism would love to have, their most ideal thing is having pacified workforce. A docile, pacified workforce. And they would want us to work for starvation wages passively, or they would want us to starve without any wages passively. The second best thing to that, if they can't have that scenario, they would rather have all of the aggression, angst, and violence produced by a capitalist dog-eat-dog system where the poor classes turn their aggression towards each other.
Right.
That's the second best scenario.
Well, that's the history of
America.
So
what you're doing is taking the second best scenario. If you're just an activist that does not have a systemic analysis and a radical solution, what you're doing is taking the second best scenario on behalf of the capitalist and then imposing the best scenario on behalf of the capitalist. And that's why a lot of these anti-violence people are getting grants from where? The Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Mellon Foundation. Look at Black Lives Matter, George Soros. Look at these activist groups. And I know a lot of people within those groups are sincere, but they don't, like I said, if they don't have a radical analysis. Even when I was a part of the labor union, I'm like, why don't y'all teach labor history? People think labor is being part of a union is about protecting your job and getting you your incremental raises.
Right.
There's no full systemic analysis, you know, and people are intellectually lazy. I mean, if you could say that's how Trump became president, telling people simple things. Whether they're true or not, just keeping – and people try to diss Trump and Trump voters. But Bill Clinton's mantra was KISS, keep it simple, stupid. Mm. And he did the same thing to liberals that Trump. He said stuff that wasn't true.
Right.
Said he was going to do things he couldn't and had no intention of doing. And when he got elected, he did the exact opposite. And whenever the right wing would criticize him, they're blind. So liberals – or just as blind.
And he more than grabbed them by the.
Oh, yeah. He was grabbing. Not only was he grabbing vaginas, he was sticking foreign objects up there. He took it further than
foreign,
so,
familiar, right. Whatever.
So, so we're intellectually lazy on the left and right. You just think, if I'm righteous and intellectually lazy,
right,
then I'm good. But if I'm corrupt and I'm intellectually lazy, then I'm a bad person. But they're both ultimately have the same outcome.
Right.
So if you really are anti-violence, I would say start from the top. Top down. You got to change the fundamental economic relationships. You got to change. You got to take control or organize to take control of the means of production.
Right.
Because it's like if you have a nuclear power plant and you have a mushroom of cancer and metastatic cancer in a community and you're just fighting to get each individual victim of cancer their right to get treatment. You're really helping the system because they profit from you as you get sick.
Absolutely.
And profit from your death. If you don't say, we got to go to this nuclear power plant
shut it down
and dismantle it brick by brick. Shut it down, dismantle it, and move it.
Find somewhere to deal with the
Plutonium. Population. Right. the cesium, right.
Right, whatever they're using.
Yeah, right. So that's the thing. So these violent youths, these incarcerated youth, these disaffected, exploited youth – are commodities.
Right.
And that are bought, sold, and traded.
And lots of people are benefiting from
it.
You know, this the new police superintendent.
Eddie Johnson.
Eddie Winslow Johnson. You know, he's profiting from it.
Yes.
Profiting from the misery. And his whole thing is for the police to strike back at the citizens.
Right.
You know, the city, and it's
he's such a token. He don't even pay to get on the L. I mean, that dude is a living token. You take him to an arcade, you got infinite plays.
And there's no history in Chicago of any violence from the community against the police.
Right.
But it's a history of the opposite.
Right.
So why would the police? Why would he have to encourage police not to be afraid to shoot? I don't see where.
Well, that's again, it's rhetoric. It's because one female officer was assaulted, but she was subdued.
Who survived.
Right. Who survived, and she did what she was supposed to do. It was actually a successful effort.
Right.
There was a man having basically a drug-induced psychotic episode, and she engaged him, and the other guy tasered her. Yes, she was injured, but is that not...
And a part of the job hazard.
Right.
And
is that not what we pay you for?
And I remember being a kid and it was like, you know, we successfully taken the prisoner in without anyone getting killed. That used to be like
something they brag about
on the cops.
But now they're like, oh, the police are too. And Eddie Johnson and black. He owes his job to Black Lives Matter. Does he not?
There we go.
Was not the previous
we need black police, faces in high places.
Superintendent kicked out due to protest from Black Lives, led by Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the Anita Alvarez, by Anita. Mm-hmm. So they put this Negro in office, you know, this black role model in office, and he's able to say things because he's black that the white superintendent could have never have said.
Right.
Could have never said, I don't want my officers thinking twice. I don't want them second guessing themselves. Do you want your doctor? You walk in and say, well, I'm not going to give this some extra thought. I'm just going to jump right in and start cutting.
See where we end up.
Right.
Let the chips fall.
And this is a police department that has a long history of violence making inappropriate, illegal, and wrong decisions. Torturing people.
Torturing folks. Right.
So if you have a history of effing up, shouldn't you say, hey, think twice?
Take a step
and
back.
Then think twice, it doesn't even mean that somebody's aiming a gun at you and you're aiming a gun at them. And it's like, should I pull the trigger? Think twice is when you're in there, you drive into the precinct, you go into the locker room to put on your uniform. You know, you can be contemplative. You can be reflective. As you're driving in your car and you get the call saying there's a disturbance here, you can be mindful of what you're getting into and who you and the history and how people will receive you and things like that. He's like, no, I want my police to go in guns blazing.
That's it.
And we fought for this. That's what happens when you are a reformist, when you think you're fighting for peace, but what you're really fighting for pacification.
Well, thinking along those lines, I found an interesting statistic because I was trying to look up, and I don't know if anybody found it out there in cyber world, but I tried to find how many police shootings there were this year. The only statistic I could find was over a six-year span, a reoccurring article, and they had over the span of six years, Chicago police has killed 92 people over 6 years. The part that had me interested was that out of those 92 people killed, they wounded 170, but they fired 2,623 times.
That's obscene.
So it is, I don't think, corral, right? Are they closing the police, having a hard time not shooting at people.
Right.
What they're having a hard time is aiming, probably.
Right, the Amadou Diallo. All right, if police were better shot and ate fewer donuts, perhaps.
2,623 times.
We're going to get so put up. Right, but remember Amadou Diallo.
80% of the people killed.
Of course, are black.
Out of the 92, 80% of them are black.
Who only make up 30% of the overall population. But then if you even get it, it's more like 6% because the demographics that they shoot, even though they are shooting 50-year-old grandmothers, you know, the sister that was just recently killed in the middle of last year, are young men. So really, they're only shooting 80% of that 80%. 90% are black males in the 17 to 25.
Right.
So it's really obscene. I mean, when they shot at Amadou Diallo, they shot at him 41 times. Two of the cops emptied their clips and reloaded and then emptied again.
And how many times they hit him?
9 times.
Exactly.
Out of 41 shots. And I don't know, are we arguing for better marksmanship? I don't even know.
No, I think that illustrates to contradict his perception
that the police are somehow
inane at dealing with violence because he was saying that they don't shoot, they don't react because they're afraid that the public outcry, you know, but clearly they're shooting a whole lot. They're not really good at shooting.
Right.
But the people that they are shooting are 80% are the numerical minority.
Most dangerous job in America is industrial agricultural work.
And false narrative, right, that police
and,
have
and
such
trash
a difficult
collectors
job.
Have a higher job site injury and death rate than policemen.
There we go.
It's not the safest job, but I mean,
but it's all propaganda.
Seriously,
you know what
right.
I'm saying? And the crazy
and
part
venerating,
about
right.
Well, the crazy part about propaganda is one, you can find statistical information, but even in that, you have to be careful in how people decide to skew the statistical information. So you start talking about per capita killings as opposed to actual numbers.
Right.
You know.
Well, there's a wonderful pamphlet. It's not even a book, called How to Lie with Statistics.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I haven't seen a copy in years. I have my copy of it. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, statistics, if you really mm-hmm. don't, if you take them out of context, then they really are more to disinform
very,
you.
Very
so you always to have to look at any numbers.
In the context of where
in a larger context.
And you also have right. to look at who's gathering the information, if they're right. a reliable source.
And their survey population, their targeted
right.
person, you know, because I always hear
it's
about.
It's kind of like what's the TV show Family Feud.
Right.
And they're like, we asked 100 people,
right.
You know, what is the first thing a man does when he meets a woman?
Right.
You know, and it's always the poor black family comes up with brilliant responses, but they don't meet the demographic of the people.
Right.
And every once in a while, Steve Harvey will look at him like, now, you know good and well who they ask these questions to.
It's
like,
true.
Why y'all?
Oh, one time, the one time I got a survey, I was called, and I was in Missouri, and they called me, said, you know, fair citizen, do you want the government to pay for your health care? No, they didn't. They said, do you want the government to control health care? Do you want government control over your health care? And I said, no, I want the government to pay for health care. I said, I support single payer. Yeah, I think the government should pay for health care.
And you know what that dude on the other end of the phone was doing?
What? Right. He was like, well, these are the questions. You
snacks.
Have to answer the questions
right.
as I phrased them.
Exactly.
You can't rephrase the question. So they call and say, do you want the government to control your health care? No, I don't want the government
loaded
to control.
Questions.
I don't want a government agent in there with the doctor as he does my prostate exam. And so
taking
then they'll
notes.
Come on the media and say, well, 82% of America oppose single-payer health care.
Right. So
you know,
the questions can be leading questions.
Exactly. So, again,
so that's why it's important to know where you're getting your statistics
right.
from. So all these statistics I got from the Chicago Tribune, with the exception of, there was a site called Intellectual Takeout that mm-hmm. I got some of the statistics from, which I kind of had a issue with them because of the way that they were using.
You need to go to Media Takeout.
Right.
And
okay.
World Star, dog, for real.
Oh.
For real,
okay.
player.
My bad.
You want some real knowledge of what's going on in the streets,
I
dog?
I stand corrected.
For real. So you want to take the guns. I want to take down the system.
Well, I'm not necessarily saying take the guns, but if the problem if the problem is that the vast majority of people are getting shot, then you need to look at where they're getting the guns from.
Right, and I agree. I mean, a lot of times when you're a revolutionary, you got these grand ideas. And it was like your wife was saying yesterday, you know, people are dying today and tomorrow.
Right.
So even if you have the best agenda for bringing down capitalism, you're looking at 5 to 10 years. So
right.
You're right. Band Nation in the building. Okay, now y'all about to get some tunes and stuff, you know.
Right.
But
stop listening to these two.
So
old men
you do
talk
need
to
immediate or bridge. You need
right.
bridges. You
well,
need to get
I think,
people. So I agree. I mean,
and I think part of the problem too is like if we're talking about what is the government doing,
right?
And how inept the government is at dealing with this problem, because it's essentially they're creating the problem.
Right.
You know.
Well,
they're closing the schools. They're demolishing communities.
Word.
When they take down the projects, you're demolishing a community. You're displacing people. Then
for
these,
profit.
Right. So these uneducated, displaced, then all of a sudden. And there's no jobs. You close out. You close all the manufacturing jobs, the skilled labor right. to the unskilled labor jobs.
But now you're just blaming the white man. Because black folks, niggas don't want to do right, and you just want to blame the white man.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to take a clear, proper.
And you know what blows my mind about that assertion?
The problem.
White folks got the biggest prison system in the world. We never complain about the white man blaming us. They convicting us and locking us up forever, giving us triple life. I've never heard a black person say to a white man, you blaming the black man? They blaming us.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're taking our jobs. Right. They're, criminals.
They're the biggest blamers in the world. But anyway, we got to wrap this gavel up. Happy birthday to John Hope Franklin.
Right on.
We were supposed to deal with this topic on our three-hour show. So we had to convince a three-hour program into 2 hours because I wanted to do some stuff with John Hope Franklin, play some anti-corporate propaganda and all kind of stuff. But anyway,
so we got a
thank
good
you for being with
it.
Us, right?
Shout out to all the listeners.
All of them, except for Nicole. And it's not right to make comments about our physical appearance.
Right.
We're beautiful on the inside,
Nicole. I only look how my parents made me, man. I can't,
way God made us.
I'm working without a God. Shoot.
All right. We see y'all Wednesday.
I took a shower this morning. I'm clean.
All right.
Peace.
See, Nicole, you got to stop talking to her like that. You know, she's a married woman. I keep telling her. All right.